before we get to this week's episode, which is awesome, I promise, I just want to take a minute of your time. I'm here with Richard Chin Kui. We
Hello.
Are asking for your support, actually. You know, we make the show at WGCU Public Radio in Fort Myers. This week is our summer pledge drive. That's when we reach out to our terrestrial radio listeners and ask them for their support by calling a certain number. We can't make this show without WGCU. We make it in their studios and under the umbrella of WGCU and all it does. And so please just take a moment to call 1-800-533-9428. That's 1-800-533-WGCU. You don't have to do it this week. The operators are always standing by. Any gift of support that you can give to this station makes us stronger at Three Song Stories and makes us able literally to do what we do.
Yeah, your support pays for the shows that happen here at WGCU. They pay for the programs with donations like this, and I'm the guy who gets that bill, so I can tell you that it is about $500,000 for the radio programming, which is a hefty load, but not for the listenership in the area. And as a Three Song Story listener, you might not even be in that area, but when you give to WGCU, it helps us to pay for those programs, which then frees Mike and I up to do things like Three Song Stories, which we just like to do. We enjoy making the show. And honestly, you know, if you enjoy the content, it is worth supporting it. Mike is fond of saying that radio worth listening to is radio worth supporting. And that's true for podcasts. If you listen, if you've listened for every episode, if you've got binged listened, I know a few people who have binged listened through the entire catalog up to this point. And you've never given to WGCU or donated to, you know, public radio, this is a great time to do it. You know, we will surely appreciate that. Give us a call, 800-533-9428, or go to our home website, WGCU.org. There's a big donate button there you can give. It's really easy and it's really fast, and it does make a huge difference.
It really does make what we're doing here on Three Song Stories possible. And we love what we're doing here on Three Song Stories. It is so energizing. We're doing it around the edges of our normal jobs. You know, I'm a producer of a daily talk show, and Richard is our production and program manager. He's who keeps things on the air sounding smooth here at WGCU. So we sneak in on Fridays with our guests, like today's guest, which is awesome. And it's just, it's energizing, and it's so close to making real radio that we just love it. But we can't do it without your support. So really think about it. If you can't, no big deal. If you can, do it. We would really appreciate it.
You guys are our heroes for listening and for giving. We're so glad that you enjoy the show, and our hearts really go out to thank you for those of you who can give. One more time, the number is 800-533-9428. That's 800-533-WGCU. You can give on WGCU.org. You can give on the WGCU app. Doesn't matter how you do it, as long as you can. Please give us a call. Here's the show.
1, 2, 3.
Welcome to Three Song Stories, the sonic space where musical memories turn our guest storyteller superpowers on full blast. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for listening. To call my guest today a woman about town would be an understatement. She's probably the very definition of that phrase here in Fort Myers. Stephanie Davis, better known as the Downtown Diva, or just Diva, has been a fixture on the Southwest Florida social scene since the 90s. Her Diva Diaries is featured weekly in Florida Weekly, but it dates back further than that. She's written for many other publications over the years, including the News Press and Gulf Shore Life. If you've ever picked up a Florida Weekly, you've seen countless photographs she's taken with her iPhone. She's been a radio personality dating all the way back to the early 90s when she was on 99X. You can hear her these days on Sunday afternoons on 93X, but that's just the beginning. She's also an acclaimed actress. She's appeared in scores of productions at theaters all across Southwest Florida, including Florida Rep, where she was a founding staffer, and Theater Conspiracy at the Alliance, and Lab Theater, etc., etc. She's also directed shows over the years, and she often hosts gala events and stuff like that. Let's just say the diva gets around, and I'm proud to say she's been one of my friends since we first crossed paths at a 99X remote in downtown Fort Myers sometime around 1996, which means this Three Songs process is going to be fun for the both of us. I just know it. Hey there, Stephanie.
Hey, Mike.
That looked like that wore you out a little bit, hearing all the great stuff you do.
I just got a little tired.
Okay, let's get started down this path. When did you first start in radio, or what got you started in radio? Because that's where I first met you. You were a radio person to me before you were any of those other things I just talked about.
Well, it was, see, my son was, I think he was about a year old, and I got hired to be a board operator at Light and Easy 99 WQEZ, and it was an automated station.
Did you seek that job out, or was it just a job?
Oh, I always wanted to be in radio. I loved music. When I was 17.
Uh-huh. A girlfriend, and that was here, right?
Yeah, that was here when I was 17 Fort Myers. I lived on the beach, but a girlfriend and I went to, I don't know if you remember, a bar called Rafferty's.
I remember it by name, but I don't think I was ever a part of that scene.
Okay, it was in the what's now the Rafters Mall. Like,
the Rafters Mall.
This is how long I've lived in South.
So that's like, yeah, that's like Winkler and
yes.
College.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So she was 21. I was 17. She got me into the bar. We danced. We had fun. We met these two guys, and they turned out to be radio DJs. They worked at Wink. And we started hanging out with them and I was dating one. She was dating the other. And his name is Mike, and he would take me up to the station when he was working. So I was, 17 and just looking around. And I'm in this room now, and I look around and I see the foam on the walls and the microphones. And I just wanted to do radio. I wanted to talk on the radio. And so later on, he and I broke up. We're actually still friends. It's funny. I got married to, one of my high school sweethearts, and he was in the Air Force, and we went up to Eglin Air Force Base in Fort Walton Beach, and we were married, and we had our son. And then after my ex got out of the service, we came back to Fort Myers, and we got really married really young, so we separated really young. And there was an ad in the paper, and it said, board operator and for a radio station, and I jumped at it, and it was amazing. I think it was like $4.75 an hour.
When did you get your first on-air gig?
Well, that would have been Cat Country 107 FM. That was, I guess I was probably maybe a year or more after that. I got hired there. I heard that they were launching the station. At that time, I hated country music. I now have an appreciation for it, but at that time, I just was not a country fan
right.
at all. But I needed a full-time job. They were offering insurance. And I remember when I applied for it and I went in for the interview, the program director, he was pretty impressed with me. He said, "We're going to give you the 7 p.m. to midnight shift. We're going to give you the evening shift." And he said, "We're going to change your name. You're not going to be Stephanie Davis anymore, though." And I was like, "Okay." And he says, "You're going to be Lee Collier."
Lee Collier. That
Lee
rolls right
Collier.
Off the tongue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. my sister is Charlotte Hendry, and
yeah.
So so I thought it was ridiculous, but then he told me that he was going to pay me a salary of $15,000 a year.
What year would have this been?
1989.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the musical background of your childhood? Like, what growing up, what was around you musically?
Well, my dad was a rock and roll fan. He listened to a lot of Crosby, Stills, and Nash & Young. He listened to Bob Dylan. He listened to Elton John. My mother was more of a folk music fan, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At what point did you own music for the first time? That you chose to own, not that you inherited or found or was gifted, but you like said, "I'm going to use my resources to get some music."
That would have been Barry Manilow's.
Wow.
45. It was a 45.
Yeah.
And it was called Mandy.
Oh, yeah. You know, Barry Manilow's part of my psyche because that's what my mom listened to when I was a kid.
There you go.
I don't listen to Barry these days, that's for sure. But I'm sure if you put on Mandy, we could sing it together.
Well, my mom was okay. She was okay with Barry Manilow. And I spent a lot of time with my grandmother, too. And she was okay if I listened to the Carpenters. So there were certain, you know, parameters there as far as like what, you know. I think I was 8 or 9 when I got that 45, and I got it with, you know, money that I had gotten for Christmas or something.
What is the earliest musical memory you can conjure, whether it be, you know, well, just anything, just something that crystallized?
Listening to, and you're going to laugh, but it's true, listening to Petula Clark's Downtown. The song Downtown and Where All the Lights Are Bright, Downtown. And it was in my baby book. My mom had a baby book and it said, you know, music baby likes or whatever. And mom had put Downtown by Petula Clark. So I remember being really, really young and that song just sounding so happy. It was just such a happy town and it made me want to go – happy song. And it made me want to go downtown.
Did you even know what downtown was?
It was the Emerald
Kingdom at that point.
It's where all the lights were bright.
Have you ever dabbled in making of music? I mean with an instrument, not singing.
Oh, goodness, no.
No,
never.
That's not your vibe. Okay,
no.
Now let's talk about singing. Now, you've been in many productions over the years. Have you been in any musicals?
I have never been in a musical. I always have considered myself a very, very good singer. I sing beautifully in the car. I sing really, really well, you know, after several cocktails, I think. But I wanted to be in a production of The Sound of Music. And this is when my ex-husband and I were married and we were up in Fort Walton Beach and the local community college was doing a production of Sound of Music. So I thought, well, I'll go down and audition and I'll play Maria,
yeah,
obviously.
Of course you will. Yeah,
I'll play the lead, you know, because who else? I mean, so I didn't know any songs to sing. So I just thought, well, I'll just sing Happy Birthday. So I remember I went into the audition room and there was a guy behind, you know, behind the piano. And then there was the director and might have been a couple of other folks who were in charge. And you know, they said, what are you going to sing? And I said, I'm going to go with Happy Birthday. And they kind of chuckled a little. They thought maybe that was funny. And so I commenced to singing. And I think about 4 seconds into it, they all stopped. And the piano player said, I need you to stop, okay? And he said, I'm going to hit a note on my piano, and I want you to duplicate that note with your voice. And I said, okay, no problem. So he did, and then I did.
And they said, next.
He said, I'm going to do it one more time. And he did another note. And I did it again. And I will never forget. And he looked at me. He said, my dear, you are clinically tone deaf.
He was a doctor and a pianist.
But he's absolutely right. And my husband, as much as he loves me, when I start singing, he just begs me to please stop.
But so you're one of those people who loves to sing and still sings despite the fact
that you are
aware of your lack of.
Oh, yes.
When was the last time you did karaoke?
It was a couple of Saturdays ago. I did Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Right on.
It's a good choice for someone who's tone deaf because it's mostly spoken word.
Right. Do you have a go-to song for karaoke? Maybe that's it or
the second
ballpark?
One is Delta Dawn.
Delta Dawn? What's that? I don't know that.
Delta Dawn by Tanya Tucker. Although I shouldn't sing.
come on. We could auto-tune it.
Yeah. Okay.
What was when was the last time you bought music that had a physical form? You seem like you're pretty high tech, so you're probably all about streaming and Pandora and things like that, right?
The last one that I bought that had a physical form would have been Liz Phair's Exile in Guyville because my CD broke and that was – had to have been 15 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. So how do you consume music then? What is your go-to sources? I mean, you probably iTunes, listen to it on the radio a lot because you're playing it.
Yeah, pretty much iTunes, the radio. Yeah, I still listen to the radio.
What role did mixtapes play in your arc?
Oh, gosh. Everything. I mean, mixtapes were how I communicated with my boyfriends, you know, like when I – in high school and on up until my 20s. I always made cassette tapes and I always – did my own art on them with colored pens and flowers and hearts and things like that. And I put songs on there that had the lyrics of what I wanted to say to the guy but couldn't. So they were – my mixtapes were almost like musical love letters.
Did you ever successfully woo a young boy through your musical tastes?
No, I think I actually scared them probably. I listen to a lot of, you know, female, heavy, feminist music. And so I may have frightened them off a little bit.
Do you remember the last time you made a mix for someone of any kind, whether it be a playlist like we do today or a CD burning compilation or something like that?
Yeah. I think it was I burned a CD for my mom. And that was, it was a really, really long time ago. But my mom started to really like the music that I was listening to in the 90s. And so I started making CDs for her so that she could listen to them.
All right. Well, let's get to your first song. What do you have for us and why did you choose it?
Well, my first song is by Janice Ian. And when I was around 11, my parents split up. And my mother started dating a woman. And this was in the 70s. This was, mid to late 70s, around, I would say, 1977. Mm-hmm. And so Linda and my mom and I, we lived together.
Was this shocking to you? Was this not shocking to you? Do you remember how
it was
extremely
shocking to me because this was before Ellen and before it was cool
and it was
to have
your mom.
Yeah. Now it's kind of cool to have two dads or two moms, which
right.
I love. I love that it's a new world for kids now. You know, it's not as it's not as scary. But back then it was very, it was different. It
oh,
was,
absolutely.
But we used to go camping a lot. Linda had an Airstream camper, mm-hmm. and we would go to campgrounds around Ohio. This is when I was still in Ohio, and we would go around and camp. And Mom and Linda would invite friends, and they'd get out the Blue Nun wine, and I would be there, and they were always listening to Joan Baez, Janice Ian. Judy Collins. They were listening to a lot of that music, and they put me to bed, and I would be in like the bunk in the back. But
you could still hear everything.
I could still hear the music, and I remember it was 8 tracks. It was 8-track tapes.
To junk.
Yeah, and I just remember they would listen to Janice Ian's album. It was called Between the Lines, and they would listen to it over and over and over again. And I think it was their album. Mm-hmm. And there was one song on there that it was dramatic. I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to grow up and be an actress. So it was dramatic and it was really powerful and it was sad, but it was somehow comforting. And when I got older – and, my mom and Linda were together for 20 years and they ended up splitting up. And
were together for 20 years.
They were, yes. And but after they split up and all that, I thought, I want to listen to that album again. And I went and got it. And I remember, putting it, the CD on and it just brought back this flood of memories. And I realized just how powerful the song was to me. It was, the winters in Ohio were very cold. The name of the song is In the Winter. And but again, there's something comforting about it as well.
But you also got to hear it then through sort of a, you were grown up then. You were older.
Yes.
You could suddenly hear it through not only your young brain, but your mom's brain to some degree.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Well, let's hear it. This is In the Winter by Janis Ian. It's Stephanie Davis' first song on this episode of Three Song Stories.
There's always radio, and for a dime I can talk to God, dial a prayer. Are you there? Do you care? Are you there? Together now. Ooh.
You know, as we conceptualized this song and walked around and talked about it, Richard and I would come up with the songs that neither of us, like, we had no defense toward. You know what I mean? Like, they took us. Like, we couldn't do it. Let's do it every time, and it still got us. And that I saw that got you in a deep way.
Yeah, it just sets off such a range of emotions, and I've actually often thought about writing down the lyrics and using it as a dramatic monologue.
Absolutely,
because it has all that there. It's a story, and it's parts of it are triumphant. You could think of it as triumphant, but also just desperate and sad and lonely and, yeah.
When was the last time you listened to it?
I listened to it probably once every couple weeks, so I couldn't tell you.
Okay, this still remains.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'll just YouTube it. I'll be up late.
Do you listen to other stuff by Janis Ian?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. The whole Between the Lines album is one of my favorites. And she actually came to Fort Myers one time.
Huh.
She came to the Orbit nightclub. And do you remember Orbit?
Oh, of course.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. remember Gay, who ran it?
Yeah.
Anyway, Gay Levine. And she brought Janis Ian. Janis Ian is a very, you know, she's a she's a lesbian poet. She's a lesbian legend. I mean, she's very – she came out, you know, I think she came out in the 80s. And so she came to town, and I was so worried when I heard she was coming to town, because I thought nobody's going to – in Fort Myers is going to come out for Janis Ian. I mean, I'm going to be right there front and center for Janis Ian, trust me, but nobody's going to come out. But yeah, indeed, there were a lot of women there, and Linda was there, and I hadn't seen her in years.
Wow.
My mom and Linda had split up, and Linda was with her new partner.
Did Janis Ian play this song?
She did not.
Oh.
I asked her to play it, and she said she couldn't.
Didn't have the string section with her.
She said she couldn't do it. Yeah.
So. Okay. That song moves you, obviously. Do you remember the first time music moved you in some way or caused just some sort of emotional change of pitch in your experience?
Yes. And I think it was when I was around – I guess I was around 15. 14 or 15, maybe 15, Led Zeppelin's In Through the Outdoor album and the song All of My Love, which is another really with a big orchestra lots of strings. And it's also really dramatic and has these highs and lows. And so that was one of the first albums I ever bought. And it was really cool because it was, if I remember correctly, it was like a sepia-toned album cover, and you could dip a paintbrush into water and color it.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
You painted it like a watercolor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
So.
Okay. Let's talk about, we're not – this podcast is not about your favorite songs. It's about your storied songs.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your fourth story that almost made it to the show, but you had to, drop it?
That's so hard. That's so hard. It was Queen, Killer Queen.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got a 30-second version of the story you didn't get to tell?
it just reminds me, when I was pregnant with my son, I went past my due date, And I was a stay-at-home, you know, military wife, and I would listen to that song a lot, and I was like hugely pregnant, My son was 9 pounds and 3 ounces when he was born, and I would dance around our dining room to Killer Queen. I had this very elaborate ballet that I would do to Killer Queen, and it just made me feel very empowered, and I felt, you know, like, I don't know, when you have a human growing inside of you, you sort of feel like you're a queen. And,
right.
And I also had heard that the more you move when you're getting ready to have a baby, the more you might go into labor.
Oh, so you're trying to induce labor with Killer Queen.
Yeah.
Does dancing play a role in your life today?
I love to dance. I dance all the time. I dance like Elaine on Seinfeld. I was a wedding.
You dance like you sing?
Oh, yeah. I dance. I'm a ridiculous dancer, but it doesn't stop me. I was at a wedding this past weekend, and I was out on the dance floor. I kicked my shoes off. I was out there just jumping up and down, and I love to dance.
What was the best concert you've ever attended?
I haven't attended a lot of concerts.
Okay. Which is interesting for a radio person.
I know, but like you, I grew up here and we didn't get a whole lot at the Lee Civic Center, you know,
right.
when I was younger. So I would have to say that – oh, gosh, that's such a hard one. But I would have to say that I had a great time at the Lilith Fair.
Okay.
You know, we took
Where would that have been?
It was over in West Palm.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Indigo Girl, Sarah McLachlan. We took a bus over there, you know. I went with Liz Abbott.
Okay.
And I went with –
I've heard that name.
Yes, you have. And we went over there with a bunch of radio station winners. Liz was working at the station as well. She was doing our voice imaging.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah, she was the voice between songs.
Makes sense.
You're listening to 99X.
Yes, the smoky voice of Liz.
Very, yeah. And so we went over there with a bunch of radio station winners that had won tickets, and it was just great. We're out on the lawn. I'd never been to a sort of festival type thing
like
that. Yeah,
and you were there as a radio person with people who were, you know, listeners, and so you were your personality as well as yourself.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Cool. Well, let's move on to song two.
Okay.
What is it?
It's Supertramp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Logical song.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out I think it came out before this period of my life, but maybe it was around that period. I don't have – I'm not using my phone to Google dates or anything like that because we're not using our phones.
That's okay.
During song stories. When I was 15, I got expelled from school.
Oh, for what?
Truancy.
Oh, so they kicked you out for not coming.
They kicked me out for not coming. I had finished eighth grade at Bonita Middle, and then I went through ninth grade at Cypress Lake High School.
Mm-hmm.
But I failed because I didn't go very much. And so they tried to save me, and they said, "Well, we'll start you over, and you have to repeat the ninth grade, so you'll only go to a ninth." Because I was pretty smart. I mean, I wasn't, you know. So with that wasn't the problem.
Yeah.
I was just bored.
You
because
had other interests.
Well, at that time, it's really ironic because Cypress Lake High School now is the Center for the Arts,
right?
And back then, they didn't even have a theater program. I mean,
right.
You were either a pantherette or a cheerleader, or you could be in the band, but as we'd already talked about, I have no musical talents whatsoever. So there really wasn't anything for me. It was a big sports school.
Yeah.
There just was no theater here, and that's all I wanted to do. And so if they didn't have that, then I would take, you know, we lived on Fort Myers Beach. Mom and Linda and I moved there when I was in just after seventh grade. And so I would take the bus into town to Cypress Lake, and I'd get off the school bus and I'd walk across the street and I'd wait for Lee Tran, the city bus, to come along, and I'd jump on that and I would take it downtown to downtown Fort Myers, which in 1979, 1980 was, you know, it was a ghost town then.
Yeah, that was during the valley.
Oh, yeah. And so, but my reasoning for going down there is I wanted to go to the library. So I would go to the downtown library and look at scripts and look at plays and read plays. You know, that's what I did. And then I'd get on the bus again, go back to the high school, get on the school bus, and then go back home. So
two different forms of public transportation for very different reasons.
They're long days. but so I could have, you know, continued on. But 10th grade held no interest for me either. And, you know, the more you skip school, the more you hang out with other people who are skipping school.
Right.
And not everybody was skipping school to go to the library and read plays.
Yeah.
So,
it's
you know,
not the right kind of feedback loop.
Yeah, exactly. So, I just became a handful, and I was sent to a camp in northern Florida, actually north of Gainesville. It's called it was run by Jack Eckerd and his wife, Jack and Ruth Eckerd, who
like Eckerd College.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it was for girls who had kind of fallen out of the system, like really didn't know what to do with them. A lot of them were foster kids. But there were a few, like myself, where our parents paid for us to go there. And it was you lived in tents in the woods.
Right up your alley, it seems like.
Right up my alley. We built our own tents. We slept in, you know, cots. We had outdoor bathrooms. We cooked our own food and had no contact with the outside world. We had no radio. We had no music. We had no magazines. We had no newspapers. We had no television.
Holy moly.
Yeah. So I was there for a year and a half. And
what? Wow.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. –
wow.
Yeah. Well, you got every 6 weeks – you had what they called Homes Day. So every 6 weeks, you got to go home for 3 days. So I would get to go home, but a lot of the girls that were at the camp
had nowhere to go.
They would either go to foster homes or they would go home with one of the chiefs. Well, we called them the chiefs. They were counselors.
Right, right.
And so this song just really resonated with that period in my life of I just wasn't, you know, I wasn't conforming, and this song really spoke to me.
So this is The Logical Song,
mm-hmm,
by Supertramp. This is Stephanie Davis' second song. Brings her back to her time in the woods in North Florida. You're listening to Three Song Stories. This is Biography Through Music. How old would you have been at that time, at that camp?
I was there from the age of 15 till just after I turned 17.
One of the questions we've asked sometimes on this show is, how would your 15-year-old self think about how you turned out?
Oh, she would have been so happy. Yeah, she would have been really, really happy.
Well, it sounds like if that song resonates with that time, you were really grasping for self-understanding, self-definition.
Yeah, very much so. It was I felt very out of place in, you know, Fort Myers, Florida. I wanted to be somewhere else doing something else. I wanted to be I just wanted to be understood, and I just didn't feel like there was a place for me here. And, so the song resonated. It's this kind of song that when I don't listen to it, it's like I go to it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm in the car and it comes on the radio, I crank it.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Hmm.
And it takes me right back there.
What would be an album that you could play over and over again and never feel like skipping any of the tracks?
Sinead O'Connor, The Lion and the Cobra.
Well, that was easy.
Yeah.
Is that the only one?
Let's see. Liz Phair, Exile in Guyville is another one. We already talked about this, Janice in Between the Lines. That's about it.
You said you listen mostly through iTunes. Do you listen to albums in their album form these days, or is it all song by song?
Mostly it's song by song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think you – do you think we're missing out somehow because of that?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I don't listen to music like I used to anymore, and it makes me sad. You know, it really does. It's I'll go to Pandora and I'll put in Sinead O'Connor Radio, and it'll give me
It's pleasurable.
It's totally, yeah.
I mean, they know what you want to hear.
Yeah, they sure do. Definitely do. But yeah, it's not the same as, you know, being in your living room with a bunch of CDs or cassette tapes or, you know, scattered all around and, hey, you got to hear this one and you got to hear this one and putting them on and listening to them and, you know.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm not sure many artists make albums with the concept of album arc in mind anymore. You know what I mean? Because of our habits. It's like our musical – the way we can access music piecemeal has changed the way people think about making albums.
I agree, unfortunately.
I think there's something probably lost in that shuffle. Was there a song – you've mentioned, you know, singing Killer Queen, dancing around with your boy in your belly. Is there a song that was a lullaby?
I used to sing to my poor child. I used to sing to Nicholas, to make him go to sleep. But the song went like this. Go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, little baby. And that was it. I made it up all by myself. I think I did. I don't know. I got it from somewhere. But my son and I have shared and continue to share music together. I was the bad mom who took her 12-year-old to see 8 Mile because he loved Eminem and he also enjoys Sinead O'Connor. And she has a couple songs. She has a son the same age as my son, and she had her son at the same time that I had my son. So she has a song called My Darling Child. Mm-hmm. It's a really beautiful song. Mm-hmm.
You know, you talked about you were the bad mom that took your son to see 8 Mile or whatever. The episode of this that came out today with Cole Peacock, we talk about I and Sam took Gwen to Bonnaroo when she was 3.
I love that. That's amazing. That's awesome. That's great. Yeah.
Is there a TV theme song you could sing on demand? Thank you for being a
– No, don't put that in my head. now that's in my head.
Sorry,
it's never going to go away. Although, just sit right back and you hear a tale of a faithful trip that started on this mighty shore aboard this tiny ship. Do I sound that tone deaf?
No,
I was going to say, normal.
I don't see any evidence of tone deafness.
Right?
I think somebody just gave you a complex early on.
And it ruined me. I could be like a major musical star on Broadway right now.
So where are you musically today, and how much does your on-air time at 93X influence where you are musically today, or are you just in there, you know, talking between the songs they want you to play?
No, I listen to 93X a lot. I like the music. There's a few bands that I like. There's a band out right now called Greta Van Fleet that I really like.
That's not a Fox News host.
No, Greta Van Fleet.
Okay.
And they sound like 70s rock and roll, just ripping guitars. And my husband is a huge fan of Pink.
Okay.
My husband.
You guys recently saw them in concert. I know
we
that
did.
Because of Facebook.
Exactly. There you go. And Todd's, it's funny. I mean, he is a 60-year-old man who he loves golf and he loves football and he loves cars and all the things that, and he loves Pink.
Any idea how that got started?
He just thinks she's really talented. He just heard her on the radio, and then he went and, you know, I don't know which song, and then he went and he bought her CD, and he just thinks she's incredibly talented. I like Pink too. I mean, I think Pink is fine. It's not really I think Pink is more kind of pop star-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we went to the concert, I was like, this woman is amazing. Yeah, I mean, she's got a great message of female empowerment. She's politically, you know, she was I actually wrote a column about this for Florida Weekly, but she was showing, you know, on the screen behind her kids from Parkland, you know, from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And she's, you know, she's great. She's and she was flying around the stadium on a wire, and she's had two kids. And she, I mean, all the respect in the world to Pink. She's great.
Is there a band that you're a big fan of that you think that a lot of our listeners would not be familiar with? Sort of, if something that was sort of off the beaten path.
I think about a band necessarily,
or a musical act of some sort.
I really love Joan Armatrading, and I don't know that a lot of listeners know who Joan Armatrading is.
I know the name, but I couldn't.
Yeah, she's never really had any radio hits. But when I first got into radio at Lightning Easy 99, there was another guy who was working there, and he was also a board operator. His name was Eric, and he was from Seattle. And he was really smart, and he knew a lot about music. And he started introducing – he made me mixtapes. And he introduced me to a lot of music that I had never heard of before in Fort Myers, listening to the three radio stations I think we had then.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, you know, I would buy Rolling Stone and read about music, but, you know, I didn't – at that time, I couldn't afford cable. I didn't have MTV or anything. Anyway, so – Eric introduced me to Joan Armatrading, and actually that is another one that I could listen to the whole album. It's called Track Record, and she's British, and I guess you'd call her a folk artist, but also Kate Bush is he also introduced me to Kate Bush, and he was very influential in me finding the music that I liked, you know, he gravitated me towards it, and then I kind of took it from there and found the stuff that I liked.
Record Bar or Rainbow Records?
Record Bar. I can't remember the guy's name. He was really tall and thin.
Up in the left on the – yeah, he kind of looked like Brian May from Queen.
Yes.
I remember the Record Bar so well. Gold Mine was right next door.
Yeah. Oh,
Ives
the
Bookshop
fort.
Right down the way.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you miss record stores?
Yes, I do. I mean, I spent a lot of time in Specs. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I do. I do miss walking around and looking and seeing the – I love album art. I'm a big fan of album art.
Do you ever go into the place downtown, what's called Joe's, or the little record store right there across from Sydney and Byrne?
A million times, and I have not been in there, to be honest with you.
I stopped in there just once, real quickly. It's really cool. You should go by.
Cool.
Give it a shout out.
Yeah.
Shout out.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it is time to pivot to song number three.
Okay. It is Sinead O'Connor, and I discovered Sinead O'Connor. I think I read about her in a magazine, and then I went and I think I got her. I think I got the cassette tape at Specs, and I remember I'd read a lot about her. She was this emerging, 19-year-old Irish girl with a bald head, and who was totally bucking the system, and was singing about things that that she wanted to sing about. She was like making her own rules in music, and I remember I had to hear her, and I got in my car and I put the cassette tape in, and I think I just sat in that parking lot and just listened to it. I mean, just like, wow, this is great. And
about when would that have been?
That would have been in the early 90s. I think these dates are going to be all – I mean, I apologize for – I'm not good with dates.
That's
and stuff.
Okay.
But it would have been – I was in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. And and so The Lion, the Cobra was very critically acclaimed, and it's still, I think, one of the best albums ever. And I just – I related to her, and I related to her music. And this song – I was actually seeing a movie. I can't even remember the name of the movie. I was watching a movie and this song was in the movie. And oh my gosh, they used this Sinead O'Connor song that's on this album that I love so much. And it's just I walked down the aisle when I got married to my second husband to this song. This was this is my wedding music. And I just think it's beautiful. I think it's about love and just one of my very favorite, most lovely songs, and that really brought me to figure out what kind of music that I wanted to listen to and what kind of music I liked.
And what's it called?
It's called Just Like You Said It Would Be.
All right. Well, this is Just Like You Said It Would Be by Sinead O'Connor. You're listening to Three Song Stories.
I would learn how to run with the big boys. I would learn how to sink and to swim.
He walked down the aisle of that song?
Yes, I did.
Was it a rock and roll wedding?
Isn't it beautiful?
Oh, it's so beautiful, but it's also so just sort of kind of in your face a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
That's one of her least in your face songs there is.
I know,
that's crazy. That's like her ballady, like pretty song. So,
when you listen back to it now, I mean, you know, lyrics have meaning at certain times and places, but then the more experience you have, the more you might be able to dig into the lyrics and their meaning. How does it feel listening to it these days as compared to maybe if you try to dip back into your consciousness as, you know, a person in the early 90s?
It's still a very pretty song, mm-hmm. I think, and I think that her voice is so beautiful. But the defiant tone that she has in it doesn't resonate with me as much now as it did then.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's what happens.
Yeah.
You know, you've been on the air as a radio personality for many years. Have mm-hmm. you met any of your idols?
I got to do a phone interview with Sinead.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Were you like shaking in your boots?
I was a wreck. I was an absolute wreck. But she had put out a record, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was actually an LP. It was like a 4-song record, a CD that she put out. And when I was working at 99X, so it would have been, I think, around 97 or 98. And it was really sort of inappropriate for me to interview Sinead O'Connor on the air. I mean, we were mostly we were a music station.
Right, you were going a little bit outside the lines.
But it actually wasn't me. It was my music director. His name was Lee Daniels.
And I remember Lee Daniels.
Yes, and yeah.
I saw
yeah.
South Park for the first time at his house.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Actually, Lee's son and my son and our general manager at the radio station, Joe Bell, his son, all three of them, Austin, Logan, and Nicholas, all hung out together. They're all still like best friends, and they all watch South Park and together with Lee. Lee was working with whoever was pushing Sinead's album, LP, and I was doing middays at the time, and I was the PD. He was the music director, and he came in, and we had just been bought by another company, and we knew that the direction of the radio station was going to change into more what I was running was what was called a modern AC station. Mm-hmm. And then when we were bought by another company, it was going to go into more of a new rock and appeal to more men 18 to 24.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that my format and my days there were maybe a little numbered. And I was, you know, actually getting an opportunity to help build Florida Repertory Theater. So I was in a kind of transition state. And Lee came into the studio. I was on the air at the time. I was doing – I had a show called The Retro 80s Diva, and where I would play, you know, retro 80s music then. And I was doing my show, and he came in and he goes, you know what? They want you to interview Sinead O'Connor on the air, and I think you should do it. I said, Lee, I can't. I'll die. I'll die. Yeah. And he said, nope. He goes, you got to do it. You got to do it. And I was just – I was a wreck. I mean, there she was on the phone with her beautiful Irish accent, and we're talking on the phone. And I'm like, we both have – sons the same age. And I was talking to her about her kids and her and how much her music had influenced me. I didn't ask anything that a normal interviewer
sure.
would ask.
Why
like,
would you?
So when's the record coming out? What's your concert tour looking like? You know, none of that. I was like, so tell me about, you know, your baby that you just like she's my best friend. But she actually
she probably really appreciated that.
She was totally cool with it.
Yeah.
She was great. She was amazing.
You know, maybe it's so obvious that you just never did, but now that you're thinking of music through this lens, did it ever occur to you over the years and over the decades, frankly, that you were putting music out into the world that was going to create these kinds of bonds between listeners and those songs?
No, it did not. But I did have a lot of opportunities when I was at 99X to play music on that station that – Most folks in Fort Myers wouldn't get an opportunity to hear. You know, I was able to play Fiona Apple and the Cranberries.
But, you know, it doesn't even take, you know, what we think of as cool music. I mean, any song is someone's song.
You know what
I mean? That's what's crazy.
Absolutely.
That's what's occurred to me as we do these is like, you know, I almost listen to the radio differently now because I'm like someone driving around next to me is listening to the song and remembering something that happened to it. You know, it's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's big.
Yeah, it is. It is big. So if you only could have one album that you had to listen to on a, you know, an island by yourself forever, what's the music? Maybe not by yourself, but the, you know, the song that you have to – or the album.
I think it would be Rumors by Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Kind of, like, kind of like the perfect album?
It is.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it has, you know, it just has so much variety and you just don't get sick of it. You know, when one of the songs from that album comes on, you just, you know, again, you crank the volume and it's, you know, it's like a warm blanket.
Is there any song that for whatever reason, if it comes on the radio, you immediately turn it off, whether it because you just don't like it musically or because it has a negative connotation with a memory?
Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. I hate that song with every fiber of my being. It's not funny. They think it's funny. It's not funny. It's stupid. I hate it.
You're hating it is funny to me. But next time I hear that song, and that's the other thing that's happened because of this podcast is it, you know, doing this creates memories that then influence how we hear music. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I guarantee you next time I hear that song, I'm going to text you. Oh, okay.
Awful.
Well, that is it. That's all the time that we've got. I want to thank you very much for doing this. It's been a real treat, and just thank you for every – oh, and real quick, Diva, where'd that come from?
It's not a quick story, but I'll give you the condensed – Reader's Digest condensed version.
Well, it's a podcast. If you got to take a couple minutes, we've got the time.
Okay. I used to go to South Beach in the 90s, early 90s, because that was where we could see music and art and people and color and culture. And there was a column in the Miami Herald, and it was called Queen of the Night by a woman named Tara Solomon. And when I started writing for Route 41,
I remember Route 41, sure.
You know, back in the Liquid Cafe days and all that. I was trying to think of, you know, a name for my column that was going to be talking about downtown, and my amazing hairdresser, Michael Wild.
Michael?
And I said, you know, I really admire the Queen of the Night in South Beach. And he said, well, that's good. That makes you the downtown diva.
There you have it. I had no idea. And now we've put it out there to the world.
Yep.
All right. Well, I want to thank my guest. Stephanie Davis is the downtown diva. Check out her column in Florida Weekly if you don't already. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
We make Three Song Stories in the studios of WGCU on the FGCU campus in Fort Myers, Florida. Our show's producer, director, and co-creator is Richard Chin Kui. Our online content producers are Tara Callaghan and Anna Bay Hirano. Chris Duffus is our executive producer. Our theme music was created by Dave Cowan and Stick Martin at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. Before today's parting tune, I want to remind you that we want your best song stories. What song takes you back to a great story? If you've got one, just record it onto your phone and send it to mysongstory@wgcu.org. We're going to start using your parting tunes one of these days. For my parting tune this week, I want to harken back to the 90s and 99X, around when I first met Stephanie, and it didn't take long to find the right song. I can remember working at the Broken Niblet Golf Shop with 99X playing as our background soundtrack when the song Bandidos by a band called The Refreshments came on. It was a big hit at the time, kind of got played out, frankly. It's the one that starts out with the phrase, "Look deep into my eyes like I was a supermodel, uh-huh." Well, it caught my attention, so I got their album called Fizzy Fuzzy Big and Buzzy, and it still sits on my top 10 list today, and probably my top 5 list in terms of albums I've listened to the most number of times. I think it's just about perfect, frankly. My song choice is not Bandidos. That one did get played out. But another track on that album called I Don't Want to Know. I'm not going to dig too deep into the details here now, but in retrospect, this song is likely the beginning of the spark of the flame that fueled my dismount from that life and my grand leap into the one I'm living now, which all began with a big cross-country road trip that I've alluded to a few times here. This is I Don't Want to Know by The Refreshments, who, by the way, also did the theme song for King of the Hill. I'm Mike Canary. Keep listening.
Life was rough. You had to have your radio and your boombox, and you had to have your blank tape in the cassette player ready.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, I mean, the blood, sweat, and tears that went into making a good mixtape. Whew.